Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. I'm excited to have my first congressional candidate on this show. Darren Perry ran for Congress in the 1st Congressional District here in Utah. Unfortunately, it wasn't a successful bid, and so he's not going to be serving here this January. But we are going to get more acquainted with him, and we're going to learn more about his book, The Bear River Massacre. So it's a great little book on the topic that we're going to be talking about this month, the Bear River Massacre. It happened 163 years ago this month. So it's going to be a great conversation. You won't want to miss it. Hey, one other thing I just want to mention. We've got a new feature here on Gospel Tangents. Some of you have been looking for full videos. So I'm going to be doing that here on YouTube and on Facebook. So for just $8 a month, you can see this entire interview all at once. So so either sign up at youtube.com/gospeltangents and become a member there for just $8 a month. You can sign up and see the whole interview. We actually visited the massacre site. So if you want to be one of the first to see that, become a member there. Or you can also sign up on our website at gospeltangents.com and you can click on the $8 subscription there. Or you could also go to patreon.com/gospeltangents. So there's three ways to see these full videos. If you sign up on Patreon or on Gospel Tangents, just make sure that we are Facebook friends. I'm going to add you to our insiders group. And so you'll be able to see those full videos. We're going to have special features on there. And so I just need to make sure that you're Facebook friends with me, and I will post that there. So anyway, that's great. It's just $8 a month. And of course, it's going to be very fun. So it's a brand new feature here in 2021. And now let's get back to our conversation with Darren Perry. All right. Well, welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm excited to have almost congressman and author on the show. So could you go ahead and tell the audience who you are?
Yeah, my name is Darren Perry. I'm the former chairman of the Northwestern Band of Shoshone Nation.
Okay.
I'm former because I stepped down as chairman to run for Congress.
Oh.
A failed attempt. So a Democrat in the first district isn't such a good thing. So, but it was a good experience.
Yeah.
I won't do it again, but it was a good experience.
Well, and so you did get, let's talk a little bit about your campaign. That's probably a painful thing.
No, it's not at all, actually. So I'm a realist, and I realized a long time ago that if I was going to run for Congress as a Democrat, it's a great chance I'm not going to win. But it was important to me to meet people, give people a choice, a good choice, and talk about issues that are important to me. And I think important to a lot of people that live in the First District. Probably not the majority, but I felt like we moved the needle a little bit on what's important. And so in that respect, I run a really clean campaign. Everything was issue-based. And so I felt really good about it at the end. And that's why I thought, man, I met some great people too that I think will be able to help me with the Interpretive Center and other places that I probably wouldn't have met had I not run. So it's all good.
It's all good. Now, you did better than any Democrat that's ever run the first district. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. Quite a bit better, actually. So I think that speaks to growing up in the district my whole life. I come from a family that has a good reputation. I mean, my dad was a school teacher forever and on the Board of Education in Davis County. I've lived in Weber County, and now I live in Cache. And so I speak so much, and I'm able to get in front of a lot of people. I think a lot of people already knew who I was and what kind of things I stand for. But, you know, having that D in front of your name in the first congressional district here in Northern Utah was just something too much to overcome, I guess. So I think, though, from what a lot of my Republican friends said, you're more conservative than the Republican that's running. And so I knew I was in trouble. You know, I don't think the Democrats liked me very much because I came out pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, and we really need to balance the budget. So, you know, those three things, being a Democrat, doesn't always fly with the people that are really aligned with the Democrat caucus. So, but, you know, I was just being true to who I am. I absolutely align with the Democrats when it comes to climate change, taking care of our environment, things of that nature, making sure the most marginalized in our communities are taken care of. So in that respect, I can call myself a good Democrat there. So other issues, not so much.
Oh, well, great. Well, so another couple things, some background. Now, you said you grew up in Davis County. Because I grew up in Syracuse.
I did too.
And you were so in Syracuse.
I grew up in Syracuse.
So we're like hometown buddies in a way.
Yeah. We grew up in Syracuse when it was a couple of stop signs and one little country store and, you know, a church. And then the big news is we're building another church. And so that's not Syracuse today.
Yeah.
And but that was a small town USA for me to go see my best friend who lived like 3 miles away if you took the roads. But if you cut through the field, you know, you're just a mile away.
Right.
So that was my life growing up, catching snakes and frogs down on the ditch banks and getting asparagus and go outside your door and hunt pheasants. And it's not that today.
No, it's not.
But yeah, I love my childhood in Syracuse.
So another thing that I thought was interesting, I know we about a month ago we went up to the massacre site and I found out who your high school coach was, who people who are our age will probably recognize. Can you tell us who that was?
Roger Reed.
Exactly.
Is that who we're talking about? So, yeah, I played, I started varsity for Clearfield High for 3 years. Roger Reed was my high school coach, and I guess he had to retire from Clearfield when I left because he couldn't stand not having me there. But he went to BYU as an assistant under Frank Arnold the year I graduated, after I graduated. So, yeah, let's talk about an intense individual. But I'll tell you what, I'd probably run through a brick wall for him then.
Yeah.
And so really good, inspired kids to their best. And so absolutely love the whole Reed family. I mean, you get involved with one of them, you know all the brothers. And so, yeah, just wonderful time in my life.
Well, and he went on to head coach at BYU,
yeah,
and was very successful.
And then really was.
It was quite an acrimonious end, though.
Yeah, it was. So, yeah. You know, you work for a church school, and you just got to do things a little different. I always wondered that he lasted as long as he did, because he was an intense guy.
Yeah.
And that's the way he coached, and that's the way he lived his life. And so I always just wondered about that he lasted as long as he did, but he's a great coach.
Yeah.
The kids loved him. But, you know, the problem was never whether the kids loved him. It was at BYU, you're dealing with an administration that probably doesn't have sports high on the level of what's important in life. So, yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Well, I know his son Robbie went on after, because Roger was fired, and then Robbie went on to be a starter at Michigan. So,
yeah, and in fact, Robbie was a small three or four-year-old kid. He'd bring him to practice, and we'd throw basketballs at him. You know, when he wasn't looking, see if we could knock him over. So I'm sorry, Roger, if you're listening to that. But, yeah, we had a good time with Randy and Robbie.
Yeah, Randy played too. So.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, let's move on to your book. Why don't you go ahead and show us the book there that you've written a little bit higher.
Yeah, this book is really came about because of my grandmother. I mean, she was our tribal historian. She was a keeper of our sacred records. But it was always important to her that she shared her culture with people. And I know she wanted to write a book. And she got Parkinson's disease towards the end, and she just ran out of time. But she did one thing that really saved our tribe and our culture is she started writing down all of the stories that she'd heard from her grandfather, Jaeger. And she was a product of the boarding schools. So she went to boarding school in California. She used that as an opportunity, though, to get educated and learn the white man way of learning. And she came home, went to Bear River High School, and then on to LDS Business College, where she got a degree in English, which helped her to write. So, you know, she even though she didn't get to really publish a book like this, she had all these notes and handwritten notes and typed notes. And back then, it was a typewriter. You're banging out keys, making the, you know, carriage go back. And then, but she had just volumes of these notebooks that she wrote about her people and the culture and the stories. I found some stories the other day that I hadn't seen for a long time about how the bald eagle became bald and how the porcupine got its quills. And it's like, wow. I mean, just more information that she'd worked on and she knew her whole life, but she wanted to make sure that when she passed away that it was available for everybody. When I talk and speak to groups, I always make this comment. When an old Indian dies, a library burns. And when you're talking about oral history and oral culture and knowledge that is in our elders' heads, when that elder dies, if they haven't written it down or if they haven't videotaped themselves, that knowledge is lost to the world. And so the fact that my grandmother had the ability to see what writing down these stories would do, and so it is really remarkable. And so when she died, I just, as I got older, I just got thinking about it, and it was probably her on the other side prodding me along, but I just felt like I needed to finish her project. So it's a book about our people, how they lived, what the coming of the pioneers did to them, and how they tried to get along, and how things led to the massacre at Bear River. And not only that, she made it a point that she wrote quite a bit about the conversion of the Shoshones to the Mormon religion. And so all of that serves as a backdrop of what's in my book, is a lot of her writings and a lot of my thoughts on the massacre and the conversion of our people and letting people know that we're still here. I mean, we're still a tribe and we're still alive and we have a culture that's rich. We have a language that's still strong. And so the story isn't, you know, a really bad massacre of our people. And the story is about resiliency. And the story is about how we are still adapting today to the world that we live in. And we're still here and we're going to be here for a long time.
Now, so you're from the Shoshone Band. What is the history? I mean, Americans, all we would ever know is anything after, you know, 1776, pretty much, right?
Sure.
And so what are the kind of the oral history of the Shoshone? How did they end up in Idaho and that sort of a thing?
Well, and that's the funny thing. I think Americans in general, I had a conversation with a friend on the phone today, and she said she was talking about the high school that's in Salmon, Idaho. And their mascot name is the Savages.
Oh, really?
She's going, but she said part of their dress and part of that image that they portray is a war chief with a headdress. But she said the headdress isn't even, it's from the Plains Indians. It's a Plains Indians headdress. So she said, I mean, it's one thing to have the savage as your mascot. It's a completely different thing that the picture of the mascot is a Plains Indian. Has nothing to do with Idaho. But that speaks to the larger question of, I think what a lot of Americans think today is what they see Hollywood portray. And I think a Native American to Hollywood is the Plains Indians. You know, a horseback chasing buffalo, that's the image that people have when they hear about Native Americans. And that is completely not accurate. It's accurate for the Plains Indians, but man, there's probably 565 tribes that are not Plains Indians. And so the Shoshone group at one point, from what historians say, was about 70,000 strong in the whole Great Basin area, Wyoming, in Colorado, Nevada, Utah, Idaho, and even into California a little bit. But if you can imagine, it was such a hard thing to sustain life. You couldn't sustain life in a hunter-gathering lifestyle as a huge group moving around and depleting the resources. And so different groups decided to break off to different areas and adopted those areas as a home base. So I come from the Northwest Band, the Northwestern Band of the Shoshone Nation. We're one of probably 8 different Shoshone tribes today that have distinct governments, where our own, the government recognizes us as individual sovereign nations. So we're a sovereign nation. The Shoshone Bannock at Fort Hall are a separate Shoshone nation. The Eastern Band at Wind River, they're Shoshone, but they're in a different band. So we found ourselves in northern Utah, Cache Valley, where we're at today, and Box Elder County, anything north of Salt Lake City, all the way up to probably the Snake River in Pocatello. So that would have been our home base. The hunting and gathering would have taken place in those areas. Although we have oral history that we attended buffalo hunts with Chief Washakie in Wyoming. He was a Wind River chief. He's probably best recognized as the main chief over probably 5 different Shoshone bands, including the Northwesterns, the Easterns, the Westerns. And actually, at one point, the Goshute tribes of Utah, there's 2, are Shoshone, really. They speak our language fluently. And my grandmother always said somebody got angry at a family party one time and somebody took off and ended up out on the West Desert and was too stubborn to come back. And so that's how the Goshute tribe was born. I don't know if that's accurate, but their languages and they're our cousins. And we've intermarried a lot with the Goshute tribe and the Western Band of Shoshones and the Eastern Band. So to say that the Northwestern Band is just one kind of culture is, we've intermarried with all different kinds of Shoshone groups over the years. And so, but that's how Chief Sagwitch, my great-great-great-grandfather, who found himself to head the Northwestern Band, he was born in 1822 in Bear River City. So right in the heart of our indigenous area. And then lived a long, long time, lived to see the massacre, lived to join the church, lived to go through the temple. And so led his people on many different, excursions and things that took place, including the massacre, including joining the church. And so can't wait to have a conversation with him one day on, man, how did you do that? How did you navigate all of those painful episodes in your life? But the Northwestern Band home base was always the Cache Valley. And if you've lived here, there's streams and lakes and wild grasses and seeds and berries and in the mountains. Everything you'd need to sustain life was found here. Now, we'd travel to different areas when the pinyon pine nuts were in season out by the City of Rocks, out in those areas. But for the most part, this was home, and this is where we'd winter, too. And so that's kind of why you have different bands of 1 to 200 people, mostly family clans, that identified themselves as separate groups, and they kind of kept to themselves. And so that's why you have some in central Idaho, some in Nevada still, some in Colorado and Wyoming, and then our band here. So,
interesting.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with author Darren Perry. In our next conversation, we'll talk about his grandmother, May Timbimbu, and her admission to let more people know about the Bear River Massacre.
She would always say that no one has ever wanted to hear our story. And she said, one day you will have to make them listen. And as I was writing that book, I thought, this is part of that. But the funny thing is, she had to really work hard to get people to want to hear what she had to say. I don't have to work that hard.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and for $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruptions. If you'd like to see the whole video, that's just $8 a month, and you can sign up either at youtube.com/gospeltangents or on our website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button. Or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and I'll just need to make sure that we're Facebook friends, and I'll add you to our insiders group, and you can see the entire interview uncut. If you'd like to get PDF transcripts of our interviews, those are just $10 a month. And for just $15 a month, I will send you paperback versions of our transcripts as soon as they come out. Or, of course, you can buy them on Amazon as well. Go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all of our transcripts there. Don't forget to sign up for our updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Of course, you can follow us at Gospel Tangents on Twitter. To hear our interviews updated to your podcast player, go to tinyurl.com/gospeltangents and make sure you give us a 5-star review. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts, like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, of course black, beautiful gold, and of course Utah red. I've probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.